Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Over at the website, AveMariaRadio.net, in the feature article section, we posted something on Peter Singer, the famed Australian philosopher who I think is still at Princeton. He's one of the most respected philosophers in the world today. He's a little different than most in that he actually does believe that if Christianity is false and human beings are not made in the image and likeness of God, then we shouldn't be going about with all this humanism stuff. Because he doesn't think human beings should be privileged over the lower animals. No, that's serious. A lot of people, when he began saying this years ago, a lot of people thought he was just being trying to make an extreme point. He was being flamboyant or hyperbolic. But in truth, he doesn't think the Homo sapiens deserves any greater consideration than, say, pigs. The world is finally starting to realize that, because he's been speaking it openly, and he just did so to a Swiss newspaper back in May. He had been invited to a conference in Germany. When the German sponsors of the conference read this interview, they disinvited him. See, in Germany, they're a little sensitive about people who believe there are lives not worth living, and Singer is one of those people. You know, the Nazi genocide, or the genocide of the Jews committed by the Nazis, and the euthanasia experiments committed by German scientists have made the Germans very skittish about just offing people. They want to retain a high view of the human person in Germany. But listen to this. This is not the best translation from the German that I've got here, from the Swiss. Let me read it to you. The question is from the newspaper. This is to Peter Singer. You do not consider an infant to be more worthy of protection than an embryo. On the other hand, you do not necessarily ascribe it a higher status. You don't necessarily ascribe a higher status to humans than to animals. And Singer responds, belonging to the human species is not what makes it morally wrong to kill a living being. Why should all members of the species Homo sapiens have a right to life, whereas other species do not? This idea is merely a remnant of our religious legacy. For centuries, we have been told that man was created in the image of God and that God granted us dominion over the animals, and we have an immortal soul. Now, he says, you know, that's clearly, in his mind, that's clearly not true. So the newspaper goes on to ask another pointed question. If you were standing in front of a burning house with 200 pigs and one child inside, and you could choose to save either the animals or the child, what would you do? And Peter Singer responds, at a certain point, the animal's suffering becomes so great that one should choose to save the animals over the child. Whether this point occurs at 200 pigs or 2 million pigs, I don't know. But one cannot let an infinite number of animals burn to save the life of one child. Well, you have to ask yourself, what if it was Peter Singer's child, right? The reason human beings are privileged over the lower beasts and why we should keep this sense of hierarchy alive is because human beings have a moral responsibility to care for the animal and non-animal world. We have a sense of moral compunction. We have a sense of guilt if we abuse the creation and if we abuse the lower animals. Now, we can argue about whether we're consistent in that. Vegetarians will say we're not consistent with this at all. But my point is, it's not whether we do it well. It's the fact that we do it at all, that we really do feel an obligation to properly care for the beasts. The beasts don't feel any similar obligation to us. So if you just want to look at it in terms of lived experience, human beings ought to be privileged over the animals because they have a moral obligation and they have an experiential obligation to care for creation, and the lower animals do not. Peter Singer's thinking, by the way, is becoming increasingly accepted in the field of bioethics. And the arguments are becoming more difficult to overcome. Right now, there's a 24-year-old who is going to be euthanized at her request because she says, I just don't take to life very well. She's not, doesn't have a terminal illness. She's has some kind of psychiatric state in which she's just tired of living. And they've now decided to leave it in her hands. She has the choice to do that. Really, the obligation is for society to, when a person is suffering to that degree, there's got to be a way that we can help. And to say we can't help, given all the work that we've done in neuropsychiatry, in, working with brain chemistry, doing various types of therapy, the idea that we can't help this woman want to remain living, that should be a judgment on our inability. Anyways, we're going to see more and more of this in the near future. And it's still the fact that Peter Singer is regarded as one of the world's, the English-speaking world's most valuable and respected philosophers. And he doesn't believe human beings are any more precious than the pigs. No exaggeration. You heard it from him. Well, I have a letter from a listener that came in the other day, and I thought it was a good letter. It's a painful letter because this person has been a long-time listener, really does care for the program, and finally said that he's having a tough time listening because of the efforts that we've made to try to interpret Pope Francis's encyclical in a manner that I think is consistent with what the Catholic Church teaches. I'd like to read you the entire letter here, but I'm having difficulty finding the text. His comments to me are not unlike many other comments that people have made to me off the air or in other emails that have been sent. They want to know why we spend so much time interpreting the Holy Father. Shouldn't it be self-evident what he's trying to say? And my response to that is, well, it may not be quite as easy as you think it is. When John Paul II became Pope, for instance, we knew full well that he had a Polish background, and we didn't really know how much that was going to affect his pontificate. As time went on, we learned that his Polish history and his Polish Catholic spirituality was very important to how the to what he would emphasize. So he brought in the Divine Mercy, for instance. He understood that. Pope Francis has a different background, and we should not think that his background plays no role in the way he views the world. We shouldn't be that naive. So let me go over a few things. I've mentioned this before, but I do think it's something that has to be brought up over and over again because we're hearing it more and more from people who find themselves frustrated by the various things that the Holy Father says. And the most recent one, of course, is the encyclical here. Look, one of the problems we're having is that there's more attacks, first of all, being made on the Pope, just like more attacks on almost everybody. We're in this internet age, and any Tom, Dick, or Sally can publish, you know, whatever they want, doesn't have to pass any gatekeepers, so you have foolish, ignorant things being said, as well as some wise and ingenious things. But I saw a note the other day arguing that this atheist German who was on the Pontifical Academy of Sciences was an undue influence on the Holy Father's encyclical. Well, if you look at the encyclical, it doesn't bear any resemblance to the ideology of that German atheist. And people who are on the Pontifical Academy of Sciences are there not because of their sanctity, but because of their expertise. They are appointed because the Church wants to make sure that when it deals with areas of science, it's not going off the rails. We know that we do not have a charism to settle scientific questions. So the Pope will often have people on the Pontifical Academy of Sciences who are explicit atheists. I think Stephen Hawking is still on the Pontifical Academy of Sciences. So it's not a blue ribbon panel of saints. It's a blue ribbon panel of scientific advisors. And also the Pontifical Academy of Sciences is the pontifical group that is less beholden to theology, because science bears less directly upon the field of faith and morals. I think that The core question is that we always do apologetics for the Pope. Many of us don't remember this, but you can read the histories. And during the pontificate of Pius XII, people were doing apologetics for the Pope because they thought maybe he was allowing too much liturgical experimentation going on among his theologians. They thought he was too liberal when it came to biblical studies. John the 23rd, I'm sure, underwent many criticisms as well. But I think one of the reasons we have so many comments being made about Pope Francis, apologetic remarks being made about Pope Francis today, is because every time he says something, the whole world hears it. You know, back in the days of John the 23rd, if he had a chat with some divorcee from Brazil, it wasn't international news. It just wasn't picked up. Popes would communicate through encyclicals or motu proprios or apostolic exhortations. They weren't communicating to the world through chats or press conferences or interviews. And so there's a lot more informal material out there that can be twisted like a wax nose to mean, you know, just about anything you want. And this is coupled by a deliberate effort on Pope Francis' part to shake things up. He said he wants a mess. He wants to shake things up. He's hoping to break down a lot of the barriers that exist between Catholics around the world. And a lot of times it's true that we kind of hive off into our own groups, and we don't really know much of what's going on with other Catholics. And when we're separated like that, a lot of division can grow. Suspicions can grow. Now, this Pope is going to remain perfectly Orthodox. I have absolutely no worry about that. But he has a prudential judgment and styles which are calculated to shake things up. And he does. He wants us to resort a lot of our positions based on gospel priorities. So he's willing to talk in cryptic phrases. He wants us to strain us. And he's doing that. He wants to overcome the polarizations among the faithful. And I think that it isn't a matter of trying to come up with ingenious explanations. It's a matter of just trying to understand exactly what he's doing. And I think when we do that, we may still disagree about various prudential judgments that are made, but I don't think his intentions are unclear at all. He is a gospel-oriented guy.